Hello, everyone, and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. I am today's host, Alex Clark. Alex Clark joined today by our very own international free agents in Matthias Almakurasaki and Ryan Splash Potts, my main men on this January Monday. How are you all doing?
I have today off from work, so I've kind of been chilling. I went to the gym today, and I've never seen that place more crowded in my entire life. I guess everyone's taking advantage of their off day. My Steelers kick off in about 30 minutes. I expect almost nothing from that game. So, hey, I guess you can't be disappointed if you have no expectations, right? But other than that,
you can only go up from there.
Yeah, it's freezing out here. I don't like this. Can it be summer? Like, please.
Please, can we just have summer soon?
See, I like the snow. Hello, friends. I'm kind of under the weather. I feel fine, but I sound like sadness from inside out. It was worse in previous days. Mac and Alex can attest to that.
Yep.
But I'm doing all right. I'm going to the Ravens game, hopefully Saturday. Hopefully Saturday so they don't play Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh loses in hilarious fashion today. But although I would be down to beat Pittsburgh in the playoffs again. So anyways, hope you guys are doing well. I like the snow. I do like the snow. I was walking home from work in the snow today, so that was fun. It was pretty cold, though.
Yeah, we're not. We thankfully have not had a whole ton of snow over here. It's just been freaking cold. We're like yesterday, I believe the low was 9 degrees Fahrenheit, which for Washington is
that's freezing, man.
That's very, very cold. I had to walk outside for a little bit during that, and. Just face hurt a lot from the wind. Because we also had high wind advisories for a bit too, so the wind chill was even more prevalent. Overall, we're doing all right over here. Again, I want to wish everyone a happy MLK Day here. I know this is being recorded on MLK Day, you guys will see it afterwards, but I'll just wish it anyway. But as we get started with today, we want to talk about one of the big signings that we had talked about in a previous podcast, but now is fully set here. In fact, I believe it was our third word, three words only segment of the previous week, and that is Shota Imanaga is now a member of the Chicago Cubs as he signs his deal. Gentlemen, what are your guys' reaction? Because I know we all picked different places here, but one of us, I believe, got us right on the money here. So Splash, how about you get it started?
Yeah, I thought my logic was pretty sound. I don't know if that's why the Cubs signed him in particular and why like the Yankees weren't interested. But I like the profile of a guy who's going to be a fly ball pitcher at a ballpark where you're hitting fly balls when the wind's blowing in. Those aren't home runs. Those are going to be caught by Tauchman, Bellinger, in theory, Suzuki, Happ, or in the infield. I think it's a nice fit. It's a third lefty in their potential rotation with Steele and a player that I'm totally blanking on right now. So that can almost be too lefty oriented. But I like what the Cubs are doing. This is their first move. I don't know if we're going to talk about Michael Busch, that saga today. But I like it in theory. I think you can get a good season out of Justin Steele, a good season out of Imanaga, and good for the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, the Cubs, I mean, they just lost Marcus Stroman too. So they needed someone to replace him. Obviously, I know Stroman kind of had a rough second half. So, I mean, he was injured. So they already did not have him from part of last year. But I really like this pickup, especially for the deal they got him on. 4 years, $53 million. It could extend potentially to 6 years and $80 million. But I feel like for a while, the talk was that he was going to get over $100 million, or at least he was going to get more than Kodai Senga did. But they got him at a nice deal. By the way, his press conference was gold. That opening with him saying, go Cubs, go, that was hilarious. I think
that
Cubs
was fans funny.
Gonna,
yeah, I
Cubs that. Fans are going to love this dude. Like a fly ball pitcher, I understand why the Yankees didn't go for him because the short porch and all that. I can see why the Red Sox didn't go for him. But yes, Splash.
Okay. Bro, when he said that he got the number 18 jersey because of Ben Zobrist, that made me, I'm not a Cubs fan. I hate the Cubs, in fact. That made me want to go buy a Cubs jersey because that is so cool that, you know, he wants to honor a World Series hero in Chicago by wearing number 18. Now, granted, you could make the argument Chicago should retire the number because he was World Series MVP on the
2016 team.
Yeah, you could make that argument, but that is so cool.
That is for real. I mean, I think Cubs, like I said, I think Cubs fans are going to love this dude. And I think he's a solid, probably two or three in that rotation behind Steele. So I think this is a good move for the Cubs. And the NL Central, it's not as weak as it was, say, entering last year. But I think the Cubs have a chance to make some noise, especially with this addition.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just to kind of give some of the details on the contract itself here, the deal was actually not that big. It was 4 years, $53 million, which, I mean, it's still obviously a lot of money, but not as much as I think a lot of people were thinking for.
Less money than Lucas Giolito's getting by quite a bit.
Exactly, yeah. But, like, I understand that you don't want to pay a whole ton for someone that has not pitched in the MLB, but he's pitched professionally for years. He's a good arm. He's a very good arm. And I think he's going to be an immediate impact on the team. And I think, again, yeah, he is the immediate Marcus Stroman replacement. But at the same time, like, that shows a lot that the Cubs are willing to try and make the necessary changes to the team. Because I do think that if Imanaga is anything like we see, like we think he's going to be, that this is an upgrade for the team, potentially over Stroman. I'm not going to say guarantee, but potentially, because he does have tremendous upside. One thing that this also brings up here is what the Cubs are going to be doing next going forward. And we've already seen the first big domino of that is they made a big, big trade with the Dodgers here. And I got to tell you, this kind of shook me a little bit. Sending someone have the details on this trade right now? So I know Michael Bush was one of the biggest pieces involved.
Yency Almonte is the reliever going to the Cubs too. And then it was two young, I believe they're both teenage prospects, and Jackson Ferris and Zaire Hope, who both have performed at the low minors, but they're both like 18, 19 years old. So, I mean, they're still a ways away, while Bush is probably the everyday third baseman for the Cubs, and Almonte probably gets some high leverage reps out in bullpen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, from what it looks like here on the deal as well, part of it was that they needed to free up a 40-man roster spot for Teoscar Hernandez, as they just signed. So that now is taken care of for them. But yeah, no, I feel like this may have been a bit of an overpayment potentially. I mean, Michael Bush and Yenzy Almonte, both very good baseball players here. And to be fair, maybe this is the start of the moves that we could see for the Cubs trying to compete in what is arguably a fairly weak division that they're in, that they can still very much have a good chance of winning in 2024.
Yeah, the thing is, if I can jump in real quick, is that Bush is blocked in Los Angeles pretty heavily. I mean, you mean around the infield, you have Freeman at first, Betts at second, Lux at short, and Muncy at third. There's no real spot for Michael Bush, who, by the way, he's torn the cover off the ball in the high minors last couple of years, but right now he just, you know, with the Cubs, he can play every third base every single day. Hit probably eventually in the middle of the lineup. So this is the right move for his career path. I mean, the guys that the Dodgers got have upside. It's just a matter of it's about the win now approach for both teams. Bush can help the Cubs win now, and he probably wasn't going to help the Dodgers win now. By the way, this does open up one more 40-man roster spot for maybe Clayton Kershaw to come back. I know he's going to be out until the summer, but he still hasn't been re-signed.
Exactly. Yeah, there's still definitely some chance with that. Splash, is just something you wanted to say on that as well?
Yeah, the Bush profile is weird because you look at the age. He's older than Juan Soto, for example. But yeah, like Max said, it's because he was blocked in LA, and any other organization outside of maybe Atlanta, he's getting everyday plate appearances because you don't have first, second, and third base. And he can't DH because there's this Shohei Ohtani dude. So that there's another wrench into that, and you're not going to move him to the outfield. So
he'd be blocked in the outfield too.
Yeah, this is fair. Older prospect can be a little scary, but older prospect on the Dodgers, I'm a little bit more open to that because I can understand why he was blocked. So I think the Cubs got a solid piece to add to that infield with potentially Bellinger, but you got Horny Swan up the middle. That's one of the best duos in baseball.
Yeah, great exactly. defensive duo, I'll tell you that much. Very, nothing gets past those guys.
Exactly. One thing I also want to kind of bring up when it comes to this as well, when it comes to Bush going over there, is that this is one of the weird trades that we see in baseball where both teams are getting better and where both sides feel like it's a win now type of move. Normally, we see it's one side, you know, trying to benefit for the future, one side benefiting now. This time, it's both benefiting right now, which again, kind of rare if you ask me at that point. But overall, now this brings up one last question here before we move on to our next segment. And that is that Cody Bellinger is another player that's still unsigned, if I remember correctly. Like right now, we're starting to see the Cubs now start to make their moves. They've already made two high profile moves. Again, this trade and the signing of Ibananga. Do they bring back a Bellinger? Because it still seems like a good fit.
I don't see anyone else bidding on Bellinger. That's the thing. The only team I've heard. So at first people were like, all right, maybe the Yankees get Bellinger, but then the Yankees get Soto. Then, you know, maybe it's Toronto. I mean, Toronto's been on everyone this offseason though. So, same with Toronto and the Giants. I swear they've been quote unquote involved in every single, you know, every single top free agent, Ohtani, you know, Snell, Yamamoto. Like it feels like everybody is, you know, in this, you know, in on those guys. But I feel like Bellinger has to go back to the Cubs. The other thing is that nobody's going to give him what he wants. He's asking, reportedly asking for over $200 million, which he's not worth, in my opinion. So I think he takes whatever the Cubs give him. Maybe he takes another one-year contract, but he should get, I think he can get around $100 million, but I think he goes back to the Cubs, but it's not going to be $200 million. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, there's no chance. And when it comes overall, what I see on this is that he has a lot of upside, yes, but of all the people that are on the market right now, he is the biggest example of high risk, high reward. Because we've seen Bellinger at these, like at these lofty heights before. Again, a rookie of the year, absolute masher of a hitter, great defender as well.
The MVP too.
Exactly, an MVP even. But we've also seen him where he can't hit the Mendoza line, where he looks like he's just a little bit lost too. And it becomes a big issue. And so at that point, he's trying to capitalize on having a big year with the Cubs, which, I mean, obviously that's the smart move to do. You have to try and capitalize on that because especially if you've been this kind of streaky, then how do you, like, what do you do at that point, right? Like, you have to try and capitalize on it because you don't know if your next year you're going to be at that level. And teams have caught on to that. That's why there's not been a whole lot of talk on him. I could see that definitely, you know, I think a bunch of teams have been in on him, but not anywhere near that amount of money. If he's going to sign 1 year, it's going to be high money. If it's going to be multiple years, it's going to be much, much less money.
Yeah, I will say with Bellinger that the Cubs got the best look at him. You can see like practice habits, whether it's batting practice or you can make swing adjustments. Like they have the closest like relationship to Bellinger outside of maybe you could argue the Dodgers, but most recent information goes to the Cubs. So I do think it's a touch alarming that he hasn't been signed yet. By Chicago, maybe they have their own reservations, but I do think he's going to end up back in the north side,
over in Wrigleyville. But anyway, let us know what you think here. Do you think the Cubs are done making moves? Do you think Bellinger lets his ties to the Cubs go and tries to sign somewhere else? Let us know here on Twitter at LAR_baseball here, as now we're going to get ready to a segment that definitely doesn't have any hot takes on it. A segment that has not had any hot takes on it, not whatsoever. And that is our positional rankings. Last week, we did my personal favorite position as first baseman. Now we move over to the second baseman rankings. We each have our top five, and we're going to reveal them all to you, give a little bit of explanation for why we have it, and definitely not make any questionable decisions. So, with that being said, here, is there anyone who would like to start us off? All right, Splash, I'm choosing you. Who is your number five ranked second baseman going into 2024?
All right, you guys know I love the batted ball profiles. I love expected stats. I think they're more predictive than, like, sometimes can be more predictive than past performance. Any guess on who led second baseman in expected wOBA last season?
I'm gonna guess Altuve.
Nope. He was 12th.
Okay.
Matt, do you have a guess?
I do not.
Okay. That's Gleyber Torres.
Oh,
So yeah.
wow.
So Gleyber
Wow.
Torres is my number five here. And I will have the caveat here that five through 15, four through 15, interchangeable. I'm not going to really get mad if you have any particular order. I just prefer my number four and my number five to be in the top 10. But I sent you guys the list of guys that could have been considered here. I'll just read it off real quick. But there's so many talented players at second base. You have guys that were in the top five last year who were coming off bad seasons, like a McNeil, like a Jimenez. You have guys that are ascending back up. You have, a guy in Ketel Marte that was fourth in MVP voting a couple years ago. He's not in my list. And you just have just tons of depth. I can't find the list. You have at least my list, 4 to 15 was Gleyber Torres in some order. Gleyber Torres, Brandon Lau, Andrés Giménez, Jorge Polanco, Ozzie Albies, Jeff McNeil, Luis Arraez, Nico Horner, Nolan Gorman, Matt McClain potentially, Ha-Seong Kim, Ketel Marte. Again, that doesn't count Edward Julian, who had a great year last year with Minnesota, but I like the batted ball profile
Julian.
with Gleyber. He's a reasonable enough defensive second baseman, much better than he was at shortstop. And, I think he's going to bring more power to the position than what you generally get out of a second baseman. And there is value to that. It's not like a net zero. And look, I like Luis Arraez as much as the next guy, but Luis Arraez is not going to be on my list. I think his defense is actively hurting the Marlins, while Torres is like a adequate enough guy. Torres runs a high expected batting average, high expected slug. Both of those are in the 80th percentile or better. Again, a reasonable base runner, a reasonable enough fielder. He's not going to win any gold gloves or anything. Doesn't strike out much. Runs a decent walk rate, decent whiff rate, decent chase percentage. So Gleyber Torres is my number five.
So I agree with you though that the position is incredibly deep. I mean, I feel like last year we had a conversation where it's like there are only five guys who could fit into the top five. But this year, like you said, I mean, there are guys, I believe three of my top five guys from last year are not on my list this year. That being Lau, McNeil, and Jimenez, because all of them had down years. But there's so many big rises. Torres is one of them. Torres is not on my top five, but who is on my top five? At number five, I have Ketel Marte. Marte, I mean, finally stayed healthy. 150 games last year, and he looked like the Ketel Marte that we expect. With first of all, he won NLCS MVP, but also, a 10.9% walk rate, only striking out 16.8% of the time, 844 OPS, 128 OPS plus, 25 homers, 26 doubles, 9 triples, 82 RBIs. He just basically did it all. His defense improved. Finally, he's back to playing second base instead of center field, where he was just not good. So he helped the D-backs a lot this year. He's a big reason why they made it to the World Series. So Marte, he's at number five. And I mean, this guy not too long ago was a top two second baseman. So I think, if he stays healthy, the Diamondbacks are going to be a threat again this year.
I could definitely see that. I think that Marte is on my list. He is not number five, though. For me, my number five guy that I have here is Ozzie Albies. And I think with Albies overall, he's a very interesting case because you know that with him, it's definitely one of those more high risk, high reward type guys. He's very, very good when he is on fire. But also, I definitely like to value switch hitters as well. And right, his expected stats coming in for this next year, not the highest walk rate at only 7.1% expected, and a 16.8% strikeout rate. But what he is extremely good at is getting on base, causing some mayhem on there, and is again one of the best like offensive second basemen in the league. Here again, defense wise, he's not like again, like you brought with Arraez, he's not actively hurting the team, but he's also not really helping them out. He's a bit more than serviceable, I would say. He's definitely better than just the average. Overall, though, I like Albies right now. My list of five is probably going to be a good bit different than your guys. I just have different values on that kind of side. And what kind of edged out Albies over a couple others was the switch hitting aspect to him, as it is such a valuable addition in the MLB to have that going for you. So for me, I got Albies as number five.
See, for me, Albies was just on the cutting edge for me. So I had him at six, but I definitely see the argument to why he can be in the top five. I mean, he had a huge comeback season, hitting over 30 homers. Yeah, I had him just behind Marte for my number five spot.
Yeah, I totally get that, and I think that's a good play overall. Anyway, let's move on to our number four, and I'll go first on this one. My number four is someone that, Splash, you brought up a minute ago, not on your list. He's on mine, and that's Luis Urias. I think that Urias is one of the most interesting ball players in baseball. He is one of those guys that, like, if you look at his baseball, like, stat pages and all this, you take a look at the StatCast page, and you talk a lot about seeing red on a lot of people's stats. You don't see that on Luis Urias' page. You see a lot of really bad numbers there. Not a whole lot of exit velo. Not a whole lot of these other big batted ball rates things. We know what he is extremely good at doing? Getting on base. He is extremely good about not striking out. He is one of the best about just finding the open hole. He is a modern-day version of Tony Gwynn in that regard. So I'm not going to say fielding-wise, because Gwynn was better fielder, obviously. But with Urias, I think there's something that is so valuable in being able to hit like he does here. Because this is, I think, one of the few examples where batting average is one of the best ways to show that how good he is. He's not good at getting the barrel on the ball. No, he is not good about hitting home runs. You know what he's really good at doing, though? Loop base hits, finding the open hole, and getting on first base. Keeping innings going. Making the pitchers have to work, wasting pitches on him. And on top of things, he doesn't strike out ever. He just continuously is able to foul off pitches until he gets one that he can at least poke somewhere for a single. That is textbook level of great play. So for me, I couldn't have him off the list. He's number four.
Yeah, so I also have Urias at number four. I mean, it's crazy because you look at his StatCast page and it's like, you know, doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't barrel it up. You know, only average exit velocity, only 88.3 miles per hour, only a 5.7% walk rate. But guess what the expected batting average is? It's still 329. That's, I mean, he hits it where they ain't. You know, like what Wee Willie Keeler said back in the day. I mean, it's, well, his sweet spot percentage, though, is also in the 100th percentile. But how about a 5.5% strikeout rate? You just do not get that in the modern game. Mm-hmm. And also a whiff rate of only 7.8%. I mean, you don't get that anymore. So he, I mean, 203 hits. He's won batting titles in different leagues in consecutive years now. His defense, yes, not good. I mean, negative 13 outs above average is not great. But I feel like he hits so much that I couldn't keep him off of my list. So I have him at number four. I understand where Splash is coming from with leaving him off, because at a position that values defense, he does not play good defense. But I think he hits enough to sort of outweigh the negatives he has in the field.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would have a Rise 7, Ketel Marte 6. I do think with the Rise, the high batting average is fine, but he hit below 300 in the second half, and that's most of his on-base percentage, right? So he's not going to walk much. He doesn't bring much slug, and you kind of get into a Vaughn Grissom area, and that's not a great spot to be in when you have like a high contact guy that's hitting like 280, 290. Like, okay, whatever. There's some value in that. But if his on-base percentage is going to be like 330, he doesn't provide much slug. I have my issues. One guy that does provide slug is Ozzie Albies. He just murders left-handed pitching. I read the split wrong. He slashed 391, 406, 617 against lefties last season as a right-handed hitter. And in Braves country, there's been the argument, should he switch over to just batting right-handed only? I don't know. But he was good enough against lefties. a good enough as a lefty is still 800 OPS, but I like the batted ball profile a little bit more than Arraez. And generally, he's a better defensive second baseman than Arraez and Torres. Rough year last year, but he's a guy that's a big on the accumulator metrics. He's a guy that in 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we're could be looking at as a Hall of Fame case, because he's going to have massive, massive offensive numbers at second base. And those guys don't come around very often. He's not a great on a rate basis, only a career 804 OPS, last year 849. That's like perfectly adequate. But at 124 OPS plus last year, he's going to play all right defense. He's a great base runner. He was 13 of 14 on steals last season. And he's one of the guys that aggressive base runner is going to take the extra base. Atlanta has a lot of these guys. And I think there's a lot of value there. Last year, he was plus 24 batting runs, 88th percentile, plus 2 base runs. That's 90th percentile. I'd like to see Baseball Savant come out with WAR so it can fit my narratives. But I think he's an excellent player. And when he's healthy, he's going to be, you know, an 800 plus OPS guy. Just absolutely murder left-handed pitching like most of the Braves do. Going to play solid defense. And I think he has the underrated aspect of he's a clubhouse leader. You know, a lot of people would point to Freddie in recent years, but Ozzie Albies is the guy that is like the culture combiner. And like baseball is a game that you can play without like a language, without a language barrier, right? It's unlike football or basketball sometimes, but baseball, Ozzie Albies is, if there's a guy in Atlanta that would wear the C, be a captain, like an Aaron Judge in New York, I think Ozzie Albies would be my pick.
I could definitely see that as well. Albies, again, I had him at number 5. All right, let's move on to our number 3 picks here. And Mac, how about let's have you start us off here with your number 3.
So at number 3, falling a couple spots for me, because he was the slam dunk number 1 the last couple of years, actually for a while now, I have Jose Altuve. You know, Altuve is, you know, when he's on the field, he's really good still. 17 home runs, 14 steals in 90 games, a 915 OPS, 151 OPS plus. So still very good, but his defense has definitely taken a step back. As has, you know, his exit velocity is not great. To be fair, it's never been super high, but there's a lot of blue on his Statcast page. Let's just put it that way. That being said, he doesn't strike out much still. Still good whiff rate, still a good walk rate. And he hits for power for a little guy. He's got over 200 home runs in his career, and also close to 300 stolen bases. I mean, he does over 2,000 hits, by the way. So he's like a good all around hitter. Now, do I see him regressing in the future? Probably. I mean, he's going to be 34 in May, but he's still a top 3 second baseman to me. It's going to be about staying on the field. I mean, this is a guy who, I know Alex is going to roll his eyes at this, but Jose Altuve is a future Hall of Famer in my book. So, you know, it's you know, we've reached that stage in his career. Well, we're probably going to see his numbers decline over the years, but he's still effective. He's still, in some ways, a leader for the Astros. And I feel like as long as he's good, the Astros will stay good. So he's number 3 this year. I wouldn't be surprised if his ranking changes again next year. But, yeah, I have him at 3.
All right, I'll go into my number 3 then. And for my number 3, I am going to go with someone that we've talked about a good bit here, and that is one Ketel Marte. I think Ketel Marte here, I just like calling him that. I know his name is Ketel Marte. I just like saying Ketel Marte. It's funny. Is one of the most interesting players in the game as well, right alongside Arraez. Here, his ability is not even so much that he's a great second baseman, it's that he can play anywhere and everywhere. He's a utility man in a starting player. And we're making him for second base on this, obviously, and you know what? That's fine. He's still just a great player overall. But you take a look at what he does right now. A fairly high strikeout rate at 17.2%. Not great, but a good walk percentage here at about an even 10% overall. His offensive bat has really come alive over the last year or so. He's definitely had stretches where he's just kind of been, meh, but kind of like what we've seen him with Bellinger, is that he'll have great highs and great lows, great highs, great lows. It's about whether or not he can keep it consistent. And so far, we've seen that he's been able to do that over the last couple of years. I'm excited to see what he's going to do going forward. So for me, I have him at my number 3 second baseman.
So number 3 for me is Jose Altuve. This is a tough one. And Astros fans, for a good reason, can get angry that he's not the highest ranked second baseman in the state of Texas. I understand, but I'm going to be consistent in my, you know, I like the batted ball stuff. Altuve is a player that generally outperforms his batted ball metrics. So I'm not saying these are perfect by any means. Like 2017, he was 45 points ahead. I'm just going from 2015 on, 47 points ahead, 6 points ahead, 45 points ahead, 11 points ahead, 30 points ahead, negative 10 in the 2020 season, 25 points ahead, 43 points ahead, 62 points ahead. So I get it. He kind of defies the batted ball logic. And this isn't even like an Arraez thing, that Arraez just dominates, but it's not in the slugging category. Altuve doesn't have a great batted ball profile, and he's not great defensively. And he's not as durable as my number two. And he's not like a Altuve is a future Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a future potential guy on your GOAT team like number one is, although not at second base. But Altuve is, you know, a great player. It's held a 150 OPS plus each of the last two seasons, 900 OPS in general. Brings a lot of power from the second base spot. Not quite as much of an accumulator as Ozzy Albies is, because he's missed, you know, chunks and chunks and chunks here and there. But he's a guy that I hope he gets to 3,000 hits. I hope he does. I hope Freddie does. I hope, just for the sake of baseball history continuing, I hope he's Altuve gets to 300 hits or 3,000 hits, 300 home runs, 300 steals. He should get 300 steals next season. But I think it's good for baseball. He also, since Miguel Cabrera retired, he has the highest active batting average of qualified hitters. So Altuve is my number three.
And that's fair. So let's move on to our number two. I don't like hearing good things about Altuve, but I understand your points here. Again, let me be the homer that I am, that I could be at times. So let's move on to our number two rating. And Splash, you want to go, or do you want like me to? Yeah, I'll move on to Splash. Let's hear your number two, because I have a feeling I know who it is.
Number two is Marcus Semien. You know, Simeon's like the platonic ideal for a baseball player. He plays 162 games, or tries to, every single season. I think in his Texas tenure, he's missed one game, right? So he's led the league in games played for the last four non-COVID seasons. The year before that, he played 159 games. He played 159 games in 2016. Just a stud from that perspective. He set the all-time record for plate appearances taken in a season, combining regular season and playoffs last year. It led the AL in runs and hits. Like Altuve, the batted ball profile is not all that spectacular. They're very similar last year. 60th percentile expected WOBA, 62nd percentile expected batting average. He's a guy that for his career is outperformed by about 13 points. That's fine. He doesn't walk a ton. It's better than average. He doesn't strike out much, which is great. A lot of sweet spots, but he's an excellent, excellent defensive player. It's tough to say he's the best, because guys like Andrés Giménez exist, and Ha-Seong Kim, who I really wanted to put Ha-Seong Kim number one, or in really in my top five, because I just love Ha-Seong Kim, but the profile is not comparable here. Semien plus 33 batting runs, plus one base running runs, plus 10 fielding runs. Not quite the 25-25 season he had in 2022, but 29 home runs, 14 steals. Went kind of ice cold at times in the playoffs, but he had I believe, had a big home run in game five. So he got his World Series moment, at least, if I'm remembering that correctly. But Marcus Semien's going to play 160 games, stud defensively, a good enough hitter's going to bat lead off for that team, and Corey Seager's going to drive him in 157 million times.
I mean, you were talking about how, you know, his durability. I mean, if you go back the last four non-COVID seasons, he's missed a combined one game over four seasons. And also, I should mention that in those four seasons, he has a combined 28.6 baseball reference WAR. I remember thinking back to the beginning of the 2022 season when he was in a terrible slump, and we're like, oh my God, what have the Rangers gotten themselves into? Well, I think he's their leader. Like you were talking about with Albies in Atlanta, I think the Rangers, if they were to pick a captain, it'd be Semien. You know, he's a veteran who's also great on the field. He's great off the field. I mean, 16 defensive runs saved, 15 outs above average. You know, he'll give you 29, you know, he hit 29 homers, stole 14 bases. He's a guy you can ask, you know, 25 homers, probably between 10 and 20 steals, around 90 to 100 RBIs every single year. He probably gets you between 6 and 7 wins above replacement. Even like that's just like an average year for him, I think. I mean, even last year with that terrible start, he had 5.7 baseball reference WAR. So Semien, he's durable, he's clutch. I really like watching him play. I'm really excited at the player about the player that he's become, because I remember he really wasn't a star until 2019 when he broke out with the A's. So Semien, you know, he's an MVP finalist. It feels like regularly these days. I expect him to be an MVP finalist again next year. And he's my number two just because number one is that good. But yes, Flash.
Yeah, I do have this fun fact that he's one of three players since 1985 to be a top three finisher and MVP for three different teams. That's Gary Sheffield, Alex Rodriguez, Marcus Semien. So congratulations. Wow. That's just wild.
That's a list right there.
Yeah, that is one heck of a list. So you don't really expect Semien on a list with A-Rod and Gary Sheffield, but that's just how good he's been up the middle. A shortstop, of course, in Oakland, and a second baseman, both Toronto and Texas. But just an excellent, excellent player.
Yeah, I want to mention quick. I think it's maybe it isn't a super high chance, but if he continues playing well for, I don't know, let's say the rest of his contract with the Rangers, there's a non-zero chance that I think we could be talking, having the Hall of Fame conversation with Marcus Semien.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree. And yeah, no, I obviously have Semien at number two as well. You take a look at what he has, and just like Splash said, he is what you look for in a baseball player. He's durable. He's a good guy. He's got a great ball data. Overall, I think he is he could be considered for number one, except, you know, feel kind of bad since our number one wasn't even a second baseman primary last year, but that's just what happens here overall. He's the best second baseman in the state of Texas. And I really like what you're saying here about how far he has risen since coming with the A's. When he broke out, he was absolutely amazing with them. And then he goes and signs with the Blue Jays and then goes and signs with Texas. I'm not sure if I would say that he would be the cat. I think he would be maybe co-captains alongside Corey Seager, just because I think both of them together would work well at that. But overall, I mean, you guys basically kind of said it all. He does everything right. Is he absolutely elite? He is elite, but I'm not going to say that he's number one because there's someone else at the number one position. But I don't think any team in baseball would decline having Marcus Semien on their team. He can play both second and short. He is a good guy. He can hit the ball well. He's one of the best defensive second bases on top of it as well. So, I mean, there's only really one reason why he's not number one, and that is because someone who was in the outfield last year moved to second base, and he was already a number one outfielder, and that's Mookie Betts. Mookie is just so good. I mean, come on, you look at what he does overall. It's kind of funny. You go on to Fangraphs, right? Look at the second baseman. You take a look on the offensive categories, right? In the offensive war. Of the top five, right? I'm going to go from 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Their offensive wars are as follows: 15.4, 16.1, 20.8, 14.5, 36.3. Come on, the dude is a masher at the plate. Doesn't even have that high of a strikeout rate either at 15.9%. Decent walk percentage, 11.8. The dude hits, the dude plays, the dude does everything you need to. He has a WRC plus of 141, according to Fangraphs. The next closest, even in the top 25 to that, is, as I go through here again, yep, is Jose Altuve at 127. Like, what do you want? The one thing that I find interesting with Mookie is not even so much that he's at second base, is that one of his biggest assets is his strong throwing arm. And at second base, you don't need a cannon of an arm as much. You're not throwing as far. You're throwing from second base to first, or maybe turning double plays, or maybe you'll have a throw at the plate. But that's not why they're putting him there. They're putting him there because there's a hole there that needs to be filled. You have the outfielders. You're going to have now the most offensive production from any second base in probably recent history. They're now at second base. He is like far and away right now. Also, on top of it, defensively wise, he's going to be all right. He's got decent range. It's going to be interesting to see what he's going to be when he's playing every day at second base as opposed to just a few games here and there. Maybe he'll get even better. Who knows?
So, obviously, Marcus Lund Betts is my number one second baseman. thank you for moving off of right field so we don't even have to have a conversation with Ronald. So that's great. But I was listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast, and they made an interesting point that the Dodgers wanted Mookie to be more engaged, and let that sink in, that they want their future Hall of Fame right fielder to be more engaged. Okay, but usually when you move up the defensive spectrum, you expect offensive stats go the opposite direction. As a right fielder last year, Mookie Betts at a 970 OPS. That's awesome, right? That's a 156 OPS plus. As a second baseman, 996 OPS, that's a 173 OPS plus. As a shortstop, over a 1,000 at a 1,039, 185 OPS plus. I'm just going to say it. If Betts can keep that up at second base, he will win the MVP. Barring Fernando Tatis hitting 60 home runs and playing like Roberto Clemente defense in right field, Betts will win MVP if he has this sort of season, OPS around 1,000 as a second baseman only. Defensively, he's not quite as good as he used to be. You know, he's obviously on that echelon of Clemente in right field, but I think he's declined in recent years. Maybe he's going to be better in a full-time capacity at second base, but this is a move to put Jason Hayward on the field, who mashes on his side of the platoon and is even better than Betts defensively in right field. Like, even actually, even if you compare their peaks, potentially even better in right field, because he's that guy. But, you know, Betts is number one. He's going to have another monster season batting leadoff for the Dodgers in all likelihood. So, yeah, MLB at number one.
Yeah, it's hard to, I mean, I can't even nitpick a reason why Betts wouldn't be number one. That's the thing, is that most other years, Betts would have won MVP. It's just, you know, it's the same way, you know, we're talking about how Ohtani didn't win MVP the year Judge hit 62 homers. Acuña had to do something truly historic to beat out Betts for MVP. It's weird because defensively, Baseball Reference says he's above average. Statcast says he was actually a little below average. So I think that, I mean, what more can you ask out of this guy? We were talking about future Hall of Famers. This guy is exactly that, including 100%. A shortened 2020 season. He has 64.5 Baseball Reference WAR over 10 seasons. If you include his debut in 2014, his Statcast page is literally like all red in the offense side of things. 8.3 Baseball Reference WAR this year, which led all major leaguers. You know, his 162 game average is 8.3 for his career, by the way. Just let that sink in, folks. 900 OPS. This year it was 987, 163 OPS plus. That's his highest mark since his MVP season in 2018. I agree with Splash. I mean, I think I could see a world where Betts wins the NL MVP this year. You know, only one person, Frank Robinson, has won the MVP award in both leagues. I think there's a chance Betts does it this year. I mean, what is there not to like about this guy? Plus, he's just a great dude off the field, too. He's got a great personality. And as someone who is not 6 feet tall, I appreciate that the 5'9" Betts is a future Hall of Famer. So I love watching this guy play, easily the number one second baseman.
And an elite 100%. Bowler, too.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what we were talking earlier. I think it was doing the what athlete would you want to, like, do, like, these certain, like, other stats and these other, like, sports. And I think we all said Mookie Betts for that. I mean, just makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I feel like he's probably good at every sport.
I mean, we've seen him play basketball, and he was, like, dunking on people, too. Like,
yeah, there's just a football. Couple guys that are just, like, Michael Harris also bowls, and he golfs. And I know a lot of baseball players golf, but it's like, I would put Betts in like if we had like baseball Olympics and baseball players had to compete in non-baseball events at the Olympics, I think Mookie Betts probably wins the most gold medals, unless it's some like Stone Garrett freak show of a lifter that just dominates lifting categories and wrestling categories and whatnot. But I feel like Betts would probably be a great swimmer too.
I agree.
He's just,
I can just see him all being around. Great at it.
Exactly. Look, there's a lot of reasons I can hate Mookie Betts, especially because of the 2020 NLCS, but he's just a cool guy.
Yeah, he is. He's awesome. But those are our rankings here. Let us know what you think. Here again, let us know on Twitter at LAR_baseball here. What are your top five? Are there any that we missed here? Anyway, let's move on to everyone's favorite segment. It is trivia time. And for trivia, we have a bit of an interesting category today. And for hosting duties, I hand it off to one Ryan Splash Potts.
Hello, friends. So this was a contingency plan in case I couldn't talk. So I can talk, thankfully. But we have a tic-tac-toe board inspired by Immaculate Grid, inspired by us. So the goal is to get your cross, like to win the regular tic-tac-toe. If you do not win regular tic-tac-toe, the winner is whoever had the most answers that I also had. So when you're answering, think about what I might have said.
Oh.
I don't know if that's going to help or hurt
that's
anyone.
Tough. But...
That hurts. That hurts. All right. Cool. Okay. Sounds good.
So here are the categories. On the top row, we have players who were in MLB Power Pros 2008.
Fantastic.
Sorry, Mac. number two, second column, is players who played for the Seattle Mariners.
Love it.
Or currently play. No, that works. Number three, World Series champions.
Okay.
On the rows, we have players who played for the Atlanta Braves.
Okay.
Players who played for the New York Mets.
Is that the center square is Mets?
Yes, center square is Mets. And the third square is players who were top three in MVP voting. Okay. Note, that was originally going to be the Mariners, but obviously they haven't won the World Series, so yeah. All right.
Sad Alex times.
Yes, sad Alex times. Mac, because your Bozo football team is playing right now, I will give you the honors of going first.
Okay. So one of them you said is Mariners Mets, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take the center square then. And I will go with Paul Sewald in the Mariners Mets square.
Okay. I forgot an important rule that this was for second base only.
Oh, my God, that was, dude.
That was a pretty critical rule to forget.
Yeah, I was about to say, wait a minute. Are these all just second basemen?
Yes, all second basemen.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Matt, okay, I'll give you another shot here.
All right,
okay.
So
that's going to be the shtick because it was second base day, and I had first base specifically.
Okay, wait, I got it. Okay. Mets Mariners second baseman, Robinson Cano.
Robinson Cano. Obligatory no repeats.
Okay. Yes, obviously.
So is that so I need to now say Mariners and Mets second baseman?
Oh no, you pick a different square.
Okay. So I'm sorry, I'm having trouble visualizing what the squares are.
Sure. So top is MLB Power Pros 2008.
Okay.
Mariners World Series winner. Then the rows, like the side.
Atlanta Braves, I see.
Mets, and then top three in MVP.
And I need to pick second baseman. That's okay.
And you don't necessarily have to be like a World Series winner and MVP in the same season, or MVP top three and a MLB Power Pros in the same season.
I need like a piece of paper or something to like write this down on, because I was expecting.
The Power Pros category. So like, do they have just played for that team in 2008? So like they're on that. Okay, good. Yes. That makes it tougher. All right.
Okay, give me a second. I'm drawing this out. Anyway, okay, there we go. Okay, so on the top part, we've got MLBPPO.
Great podcasting, by the way.
Oh, amazing. So, yeah, no, we should have made like a graphic for this or something. Definitely. The next MLB Power, after MLB Power Pros on the top.
I could share it.
Oh, that'd be good to do it. Yeah, should the voice start drawing out.
Okay, let me share it real
no
quick.
No worries, you're good.
If we had an editor, they'd probably edit this out.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, we could still.
We could. I don't know. Can you guys see?
Yes, okay. I can definitely see it now. This makes a lot more sense. Okay. So we
all right,
need
now I get
a.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, and we're trying to think of an exact player, right?
Yes.
All
these? Yes.
Okay. And only second baseman. Okay.
Yep.
Because I was about to say Atlanta and Seattle was gonna be easy on that one, but no. I'm gonna go with
Can you
okay,
get
so quick
bonus?
question for the MLB Power Pros 08 1.
Yes.
Is that one where they had to be MVP in 08?
No.
Anytime
No.
then?
Yeah, anytime.
Okay,
Top three,
then.
just top three doesn't have to be MVP in that season.
Okay. Dang, you got rid of Robbie Cano, because that's what's gonna be my thing for
Haha.
MLB Power
Yes.
Pros. Let's
And you
see
get
here.
bonus points if you pick the same player I have in my personal grid.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's see here. Let's go with MVP top three and World Series winner. I'm gonna go with Mookie Betts. Oh no, so yeah, Mookie Betts is now second baseman, so
Yeah, that's fine. Marcus Slim Betts.
okay.
All right. I'm gonna go. I hope to God this guy was in the game. I think he was. I'm gonna assume he was. All right. MVP top three, MLB Power Pros, Dustin Pedroia.
Dustin Pedroia, starting first
That's
baseman
great.
for the Boston Red Sox.
He won MVP in 2008, so
Yep.
nice.
All right.
Okay.
Mac, or Alex.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember anybody that okay, Atlanta and Seattle at second base.
Remember, it is tic-tac-toe.
It's tic-tac-toe. Oh. That means I have to get Atlanta a World Series winner.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I kept thinking Immaculate Grid. Sorry. All right, so I have to go for Atlanta and World Series winner
I mean, you
second
could hope
base.
that Mac doesn't get
I
that
mean,
right.
okay, I'll make this easy, the Atlanta World Series winner, then we'll just go with Ozzie Albies.
Wizard,
Ah.
yes. All
Okay, I
right.
completely forgot that tic-tac-toe was a thing, so okay.
Yes, and it says tic-tac-toe board.
I like look, okay, all right.
I've
You
seen
can
reading is
I can think
hard.
of
I
worse.
understand. All right, Mac.
Oh man. Okay, New York Mets. World Series winner, I'm going to go for Wally Backman.
I believe you're right.
Yes,
He was not a mine.
he was a platoon second baseman with Tim Tuffle
Yep.
in 1986.
Wally Backman. Right, Alex.
All right, well, for block, I have to go for MLB Power Bros. 08 and New York Mets. Trying to think of who was on. Who was the second baseman of that team? Like, I'm trying to think about like me doing like the trades and all that stuff. Because Jose Reyes was their shortstop. I don't know if he had second base eligibility though. Okay, for MLB Power Pros 2008, if they had second base as a secondary, would that count?
I'd rather not have to check it.
That's fair. I'm trying to think of then who was their second baseman back then. The only thing that's coming to my mind is I'm seeing a yellow bar that says Castillo, but I don't know if that's right. I don't know what kind of Castillo that would be.
I don't know what kind of Castillo that's hilarious.
That's a great quote. That's a good quote right there.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
What? That quote? Yeah.
Yes.
I only know one Castillo. I only know a couple. I'm gonna go say Luis Castillo because
That
I
is
don't remember.
correct, Luis Castillo.
God,
Man. Also, bonus point because that was
no
who
way.
I had in my grid.
That
So,
is the
Alex.
last name any Mets fan wants to hear these days.
Oh my
He dropped the
gosh.
ball. He dropped the
Exactly.
ball.
You did. Yeah.
All right.
God, that's a man nobody ever wants to associate with.
All right, Mac. You have
All
three
right.
squares
Where am
left.
I?
I don't
Okay.
think you have a chance of winning.
Yeah, you don't have. I got rid of
So
your
you
one
have
square.
to get one of my players to tie for bonus
What
points.
in the world? Okay.
I will say one of these is easier than the others for bonus
Going
point
to say
purposes.
Seattle MVP top three. I believe there's only one possible answer there, Brett Boone.
That is a bonus point. Brett
Let's
Boone.
go.
Nice.
I guess you can win. So, Alex, back to you.
I mean, I have to go for Seattle and Atlanta second baseman.
I guess you don't have to.
But... I mean, I have to. The problem is we can't repeat. You said, right?
Yes. No repeats.
Damn, because there's Cano again. But
yeah, I think Cano works for just about every spot.
Yeah, I know, right? Almost, which is dumb.
Well, if we like bend the rules a little bit, he would be all of the top or the first row. Yeah, he was third in 2010 MVP voting.
I legitimately cannot think of even one person that fits this grid. Yeah, I got nothing. Like, I hate that I don't know a Mariner, but I don't know who played second base while also playing for Atlanta.
That's the tough part, is that I can think of guys who play for both teams, but I can't think of a second baseman.
Like, for some reason, I know Brett Boone, I think, played for Atlanta for, like, like a cup of coffee. But I can't think of anyone else. What's up?
That would be a repeat, but he didn't play for the Braves in 99.
Okay, Splash, can you confirm that there is an answer to this question?
Yes, there is I had to fill out the grid myself.
Yeah.
And it's not Robinson Cano, although Robinson Cano fits for it. Yeah. And Brett Boone fits for it. But yes, there are other available answers.
I have no idea.
I feel like I should know this answer, and I'm just drawing a complete blank.
Yeah, this is tough. I'm trying to think here's one name, I guess.
I will say the guy in my list didn't play second base for the Mariners, but he did play second base for the Braves. And he's classified on Baseball Reference as a second baseman.
Okay.
I don't know if that helps.
I don't think it does. The only name that's coming to my mind is someone that I know didn't play. Well, okay. There's one name that's popping out in my mind, but I'm not I don't think it's right. I'm going to go Gordon Beckham.
I will have to check that. Gordon Beckham.
Did Gordon Beckham play for the Mariners? That's my question.
Yeah, he played for like
a minute. This is a correct answer. And actually better than my answer. Wow. Better than my answer, because my guy didn't play second base for your Bozo Brigade. All right. Mac.
Oh my God.
If you get the player that was on my list, you win. If you don't, then it's a tie.
Okay, I believe I know the answer here. At least I think this guy was the second baseman for the Braves back then. And I hope that the game put him there too. Kelly Johnson.
That is the winner right there. Kelly Johnson.
Let's go.
AL East legend. Good job, Mac. My grid was Kelly Johnson, Luis Castillo, Jeff Kent down the first column. Second column, Tommy La Stella, who did not play second base for Seattle, but he's a second baseman. Sam Haggerty in the middle. Brett Boone, bottom. And then the right side, Johnny Evers, Boswell for the Mets, and Snuffy Sternweiss for the Yankees back in the 40s. My guy.
Wow. That's fun.
I'm surprised none of you got Snuffy Sternweiss.
I'm going to be honest here.
Snuffy
person.
Is the only thing that your voice is right now. I didn't think about that as a baseball player. So.
Dang. Okay. Well, goodbye, friends.
All right. No, thank you for that, Swash. That was interesting. I'd love to do that again sometime. Nice. That was fun. Just tough, but fun. All right. But with that being said, it's now time for for the segment we like to end every show with here, the moment to ourselves, where we take a moment, talk about whatever's on your mind. Does not have to be baseball related, but it absolutely can be. Is there anyone who would like to start us off? If not, then I will.
You can go ahead. I'm still thinking.
Sounds good. All right. So my time will begin in 3, 2, 1. So I'm really excited. By the time this podcast comes out, It is, I will more than likely be seeing some very good friends of mine. So friends that are going to be coming from California, and I am so, so excited. As you're going to see, these are some of my best friends that I've known for several years. And I've actually only met them in person twice. And they're getting to come out just for have fun for a week. And the last time they came out, I didn't get to spend a whole ton of time with them. So I'm really excited to get to rectify that this time around here. Just going to go have fun, play games, play a little bit of tourist. And I am so, so unbelievably excited to get to see them. Yeah, I still have a lot to do. Still got to get packed. Still got to get car cleaned out, get some other things put together. But just something exciting is going on in my life. So yeah, there's that. Alrighty then. So who would like to go next?
I can go.
All right, sounds good. Splash, your time begins in 3, 2, 1, go.
So by the time we record the next time, I will have gone to a Baltimore Ravens playoff game. And I just want to throw this out there. I know Dallas Cowboy fans probably aren't listening. But playoff disappointment is such a funny thing. And I will say I've seen both the Ravens and Braves and Red Wings and Cavs win titles. So I guess I come with a different perspective. But winning in the playoffs is just hard, man. And the best team doesn't always win. The best team doesn't always win an individual game, individual round. So you got to keep your head up. And, you know, I find that the best Cavs team I ever saw won one game in the finals. Right, the 2017 team, the best Braves team I saw got dumped out of the first round by the Phillies, and the second best Braves team I saw also got dumped out of the first round by the Phillies. The best Ravens team I've seen is probably this year's team, but the 2012 Ravens that actually won the Super Bowl probably get whacked by the 2018, the 2010 team, the 2011 team, 100%, the 2014 team, the 2018, 19, 20, 21, and 22 teams, and 23, of course. So it's just a funny thing. The playoffs are a fickle thing. It's not indicative of how good teams are, right? This is why I'm not a proponent of having the Texas Rangers number one in power rankings, with all due respect to the Rangers. Now, if you've never won a title and you don't have that perspective, I would understand, but it's tough, man. So I hope the Ravens win. I hope I can at least look at tickets for the AFC Championship game and put myself in more debt. But the playoffs are hard, and I know the Ravens are going to get roasted, and you're going to, whoa, did you pay Lamar, and Lamar's a fraud. I get it, but it's just tough to win in January, man. And like, Joe Flacco is a horrible playoff performer until he had the crazy run in 2012, and now he's people were saying, oh, well, if he goes on a good run with the Browns, he's a Hall of Famer. The Eli Manning has 8 games. He was a Hall of Fame caliber player, and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame in a couple of years. 8 total games out of his entire career. He played every game for like almost 2 decades. Like, out of the 300 games he played ish, he was elite for 8 of them, but they happened to be 4 consecutive playoff games in 07, 4 consecutive playoff games in 2011. So sorry for going too long, but go Ravens.
Yeah, 2.5 minutes. There, my
dudes. That could be worse.
What? Yeah, no worries. It's fine, man. It's just kind of funny because, like, for those that don't know, like, I hold up like my fist when, because I keep the time at the 1 minute mark, and I was just holding my arm up for like a minute and a half, just like,
That was only half as long as the Otani rant I had the one day.
You know, you're not wrong. Anyway, all right.
It is what it is.
That could have been like 10 minutes, legitimately. Yeah. That could have been a whole
segment. I mean, to be fair, that's what our podcast is. It's just ranting, to be fair.
Good point.
All right, Mac, you ready to go?
Yeah, sure.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
So I'm sort of going to continue off of what Splash was saying. As I'm currently looking, the Steelers are trailing the Bills 7-0 in the first quarter. And, you know, here's the things that obviously in baseball, I'm a Mets fan. I've seen 3-4 playoff appearances. We count 2016. I was 6 months old when they made the World Series in 2000. So I don't have much to say there about the playoffs. I've gone to 2 playoff games. One of them happened to be the night they got eliminated a couple of years ago. And then in basketball, I'm a Knicks fan, which, again, there is not much playoff success there. But in football, you know, as a Steelers fan, I almost feel kind of like the way Yankee fans do in baseball, where we have a lot of history, let's just say that much, but they also haven't won a playoff game since I was junior in high school. So, I understand, I feel kind of like a spoiled brat when it comes to football, but it is, like Splash was saying, it's incredibly hard to win playoffs, especially in a one-game sample. So if your team is in, you have a chance, but also you could be, 17-0 or 162-0 or 82-0 and still get bounced immediately. So just my two cents there.
Yeah, trying to win in January is probably one of the hardest things to do just because the competition is so high, the lights are on you. It's tough. But you know what? That's going to do it for our podcast today. Let us know what you thought about any of the topics, especially the grid. It's like the tic-tac-toe grid. Let us know who you would have had in each one of those, again, at LAR_baseball. But that's going to do it for us. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Make sure you go follow us on Twitter at LAR_baseball. You can follow me on Twitter at TheSportsGuy242. Follow Mac at Matthias_A_K. And then follow Splash at MrSplashMan19. But from all of us, here at Lost is Above Replacement, we want to thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe. And we'll see you all real soon. Thank you.